Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
So we're going to talk about the top 300 comics as reported by Diamond for July 2007. We'll start with the breakdown of this list of the top 300. And man, once again, Marvel is just doing gangbusters with over 51% of the top 300, both by units and by dollars. And specifically 51.38% by units, 51.51% by dollars. And they did that with 93 items on the list of the top 300, which is, you know, a substantial amount right there. But DC did pretty strong with about a third of the volume by units and dollars, with 33.2% by units and 32.11% by dollars. So, I mean, once again, we've got one publisher taking about half, another one taking about a third, and leaving everybody else to fight for what's left. Dark Horse once again comes in what these days is considered a fairly strong third place, with 4.74% by units and 4.59% by dollars, and did that with only 20 items on the list. Image comes in at a fourth place with 3.16% by units and 3.29% by dollars. And from there, everything has, you know, a percent and a half, 2% or under. Now, the one a little further down the list of publishers that I kind of found interesting was Rude Dude Productions, which came in with 0.14% by units and dollars, and of course did that with the single title of Nexus.
The Return of Nexus.
Yeah.
After lo these many years.
Because that hadn't seen print in what, 10 years or over?
At least 10 years. And to Steve Rude's credit, he picked it up in 99 in the last issue that came out with 98.
Yeah.
He didn't start over with a number one. And I think he figured, hey, you know, if someone likes Nexus, they're going to pick up Nexus. And I did, so.
Yeah, totally. And it did a little over 11,000 units, which I don't know how it was doing back in the day, because that was before my numbers really, you know, the data I have kicks in. But I'm sure it was doing much better than that. But man, talk about a night and day difference in how things are today versus the last time Nexus was being published.
Right.
I mean, you had a lot more viable second-tier publishers. Hell, they were viable secondary distributors beyond Diamond. And, I mean, things that are hits today were probably things that would have been under consideration for cancellation in terms of the level of sales.
And I can verify 11,005 copies sold, because I didn't buy mine through Diamond. I bought it from Steve. So...
You know, I got to figure he probably does okay at conventions.
He has a mailing list. Well, also, he has a mailing list that I'm on, and he does sell stuff through his website. And he sells them, you know, even like, for instance, the Nexus Archives that Dark Horse puts out.
Mm-hmm.
He sells those on his website, and you can get it autographed from him, and he sells it at a discount that's roughly equivalent to getting it from Amazon. You know, you can get it for about 30% to 35% off from him. So I typically buy those from him as opposed to buying them through Diamond or, you know, wherever.
Right, right. It's good to see some of these properties that have lain dormant for too long coming back. Now, the total units was at about 7.6 million, which is up from the previous month, but down a little from the month prior to that. So we're seeing a bit of, you know, fluctuation stuff as happens, depending what gets published and what doesn't in a given month.
Right. It was good to see it bounce back, though, from June. June was a bit of a low point.
Yeah. You know, Marvel once again dominating, and it had 8 of the top 10 slots this month. But the one that I think really kind of stands out is the number one slot, which was Thor number one, with 165,256 or so units, which is fairly good opening numbers for an ongoing title. In many respects, I would say almost too good of opening numbers, because it's really unlikely that it's going to be able to sustain this. I said the same thing when Wonder Woman and The Flash relaunched for DC about a year or so back.
Mm-hmm.
When you come in that strong, I mean, the only titles we see routinely doing above the 100,000 mark are like New Avengers, Justice League, and, you know, usually team books like that, maybe one or two others. Buffy is doing fairly strong, but these are exception cases. And solo titles, these days, I mean, really, they're not doing above the 90,000 mark, if that, usually closer to the 70 or 80,000 mark for good sales. So certainly this had, I believe, an alternate cover or two, and it being a much anticipated return and a high profile relaunch, clearly it's going to go down. I mean, that's a given.
Yeah. There was a 50-50 variant cover on this issue.
Yeah.
So there is a Michael Turner one and I think an Olivier Coypel one.
And I was thinking there was a third cover that was a not even split.
So there might have been a 1 in 10 beyond that. Yeah, that's right. There was a Suidam zombie variant.
Of course. We got to have the zombie variant.
I'm looking it up.
Particularly ironic.
Arthur Suidam,
yeah.
Zombie variant. By the king of the zombie cover drawers, Arthur Suidam.
Yeah. So, I mean, good to see Thor come back, because it's been a while since his title was out. And this came in about 30,000 units better than the previous relaunch of the title, which was back in May 1998. So it's doing pretty good. Again, better than the last go-round on this. But it's going to be easily, you know, 4 to 6 months before we have a good idea of where this title is likely to land in terms of ongoing sales. But certainly a very strong launch and should be commended for that. In the second place was the final issue of the Fallen Son, Death of Captain America series. And it did 156,814 units, which is actually up about 14.31% or 19,629 units from the previous issue. What's really interesting with this is this title had a swing from that fourth issue, which was the low point in sales with 137,200 copies sold, to the high point, which was actually the third issue with 171,800 units. And that's a pretty big swing. But also, I mean, all five of those did really, really well.
I think the minor fluctuation is just who was in each one of those issues, and I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, but I mean, this fluctuated by, what, 34,000 units or something? I mean, I wouldn't exactly consider that a minor fluctuation.
Well, I think, you know, for instance, depending on who was in it, like the first one was Wolverine.
Right, and that did 164,651. But Wolverine, popular character. Now, the second one, that was the Avengers? No.
Number two had the Thing and, like, the Avengers. I think it was the Avengers was the actual title of it, the New Avengers, and it had...
Right.
That was the one with the poker game.
Right, right. I thought that was okay.
The third one was Captain America.
Right.
Himself.
And the fourth one was Spider-Man, wasn't it?
Right. The fourth one was Spider-Man, and then the fifth one was Iron Man.
Right.
So,
but it was one that you know, it started at that 164,000, went down to the 146,000, up to the 171,000, down to the 137,000, up to the 156,000. I mean, it was bouncing around a bit, and again, depending who was in each issue.
It's surprising to me that was number four the low point?
Yeah.
And that had Spider-Man, which is actually kind of strange to me. Because it seems like Spider-Man would be a bigger draw than some of these other characters, certainly, you know, kind of like the New Avengers type of folks. But maybe not. I mean, New Avengers certainly is doing very well for itself. So.
Oh, yeah. It routinely outsells the Spider-Man titles. So.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see the fluctuation in this title and just how strong it remained throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Every one of those issues had a variant cover.
Of course. Of course. How could you not?
And I didn't even notice, but I'm looking at the article online, and it's showing all the variant covers. It's not even showing the regular covers.
Yeah.
It's showing all Michael Turner variant covers.
I tell you, the number of variant covers is just astounding. I mean, out of the top 10, at least half the items this month had variant covers, I believe. It's good for short-term sales boost, but long-term, I don't think it's going to keep bringing people back. The number three item, World War Hulk number two, that was down 17.63% from that first issue, which is a drop of 33,237 units, but still a very respectable 155,257 units. They've got another home run, I think.
One thing that I think is worth noting there, though, is that that drop is taking into account that there was an uptick in number one because there's a reorders in the amount of a little over 10,000.
True.
In the aggregate sales of that first issue.
Yeah.
So I think as we go along, I would expect number two to have some reorders as well.
Oh, most certainly. I expect that we're going to see a very similar trend that we did on Civil War, where these issues show up on the list in reorders for a couple of months. Marvel has shown that they've got the ability to keep these things available to retailers and that retailers have customers that still want them. That's a win-win for everybody. In slot number four, we've got Wolverine 55, which did 130,652, and that's a jump up of 36%.
I'm really surprised that that jumped so much. What was special?
This had the variant cover, and this was the one that was the final go-round with Sabretooth, I believe.
Okay.
So this was supposed to be yet another, you know, big, huge moment in Marvel history. I don't really recall it being that.
Well, every issue since every issue 50 has had a black and white variant cover by Simone Bianchi.
Yeah.
So the variant cover is not like anything different. I mean, as you were saying, this is another rife with variants kind of thing. But maybe it's the end of the story arc. I don't know.
This is the one that was supposed to be yet another huge turning point in the Marvel history.
Yeah, well, was it?
So this, I think, was propped up in hype.
I didn't get it, was it?
Not that I recall.
You get Wolverine, right?
Oh, of course I get Wolverine. It was yet one of the 100,000, you know, different go-rounds he's had with Sabretooth. And sure, they may be building to something, but I didn't see it as a, oh my god, things will never be the same again kind of moment. But based on the hype alone, I mean, this is the same kind of hype machine they had going with the death of Captain America, with the big reveal at the end of the New Avengers an issue or two back. Not all of them are going to deliver. But this is a case where, you know, what are retailers going to do? Are they going to bet that this isn't going to deliver and then essentially risk under ordering? Are they going to up the orders just a little? I mean, I don't know. Tough time to be a retailer, certainly.
What I find interesting when it's, you know, since we are looking at orders by retailers for the most part on these initial sales, I mean, this is something that I didn't think of when we were doing last month's numbers with Countdown. But, you know, the fact that Countdown drops issue after issue after issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if we look at this month, you know, 43, 42, 41, 40, each issue drops, well, 43 dropped 40, just a couple, a handful of it, 46 issues. But then it dropped 796, 494, and 519. So, I mean, but there is a drop. That means that some retailer out there, and they all order all four of these on the same order form, they're ordering 15 copies of issue 43 and then 14 copies of number 42 or something. I mean, somewhere along the line, they are building this drop into how they're ordering the thing.
Totally. But it's a question of chicken and the egg. Are they doing this because they know there's going to be attrition, or is there attrition because there's fewer copies out there? And I think it's a little of both, because certainly, I think more so than used to be the case, comic readers are incredibly fickle. And they will drop the book for any excuse sometimes. Certainly, there are also very loyal readers that'll stay on a title that doesn't deserve to keep them. But retailers are going to assume that attrition happens, and it does. And usually what you find is titles start at some point, or they're at whatever given level, and either they're fairly stable, which doesn't happen that often, or as most likely is the case, retailers are chasing the sales either up or down, sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, sometimes drastically. And in a case of like Countdown, they know that there's going to be it event fatigue or people just needing to cut back on their spending in general, or for whatever reasons, they know they're not likely to sell the same number of copies issue after issue after issue, so they pull back on their orders. Now, typically what we're seeing is during the month, the first issue that's solicited for the month sees the biggest drop, and then the others see a minor drop after that. It's not always that way, but that seems to be the case. Now, here, we're seeing a drop of 0.06%, 1%, 0.68%, 0.71%. And, you know, these are a couple hundred copies sometimes, but these are negligible drops in sales.
These are far less than the drop-offs on the issues that we talked about last time.
Yeah. Well, and while Countdown started lower than 52, it's doing a much better job retaining its sales level than 52 did. The level of drop-off is much shallower. I mean, it's still losing readers, and that's not a good thing, but when you consider the fact that people like Tom Brevoort over at Marvel has gone on record saying that it really doesn't matter what they do, a title's going to lose 1% to 3% per issue just by nature of being published or whatever, you know, just as a almost a truism of publishing for Marvel. So anything that either goes up or shows a loss less than that on a routine basis is doing better than average. If you look down this list and you look at the column I have with the deltas, most of the stuff is red, indicating it's a drop. And in this month, 166 items sold less than the previous issue, 54 sold better, and 64 had no previous issue to compare against, and 16 were reorders, so I don't do comparison in those cases. But over half the list, the item dropped to some degree. Again, the question is it dropping because readers are having a hard time finding the issues they want sometimes, or is this a true reflection of what the buying habits are for readers?
Right.
In other words, who's controlling these trends really? Is it the retailers or the readers? And I think it's a little of both.
Right. I find it interesting that there's that automatic drop-off every issue, and there's probably no way to ever really find this out. But, you know, since, again, it is based on what retailers are ordering, to some extent, sight unseen, and when I see drop-down issue over issue of Countdown that are all ordered on the exact same thing, so, you know, there's no trending. It's just that some retailer somewhere has to be just reducing their number of issues at some point in the month. They're ordering some of the issues heavier than others. It's just strange.
Well, and it comes down to, I mean, the drops of this, it just means one out of every five or six retailers is conceivably pulling back buying a copy.
Right. Well, I mean, even look down around slots 67 through 71. This is another one that's similar, the Annihilation miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Wraith, Quasar, and Star-Lord.
Right.
Now, to me, and, you know, I'm certainly not going to put myself up as a typical comic book reader, but it's kind of like, you know, I'm buying into Annihilation. I'm either going to get all three of these or I'm not going to get any of them. You know, I'm not going to be buying just one. So it's just interesting to me how you can have a variation of about 1,500 issues between Star-Lord and Wraith.
Well, what gets me is the order they're in.
And yeah, because I like Star-Lord's the one I like the most out of those three, and Wraith is the one that they're in the exact opposite order of how much I like them.
Wraith is a totally new character that never appeared anywhere prior to this.
Yeah.
So why did it place at rank 67 above Quasar and Star-Lord? Granted, it did 37,225 units versus Quasar, which did 37,032 units, so only off by about 200 units there.
I find it most interesting that then you drop down over 1,000 to Star-Lord, to 35,818. And Star-Lord's the longest established character in the Marvel Universe out of any of these three.
Well, and he was a player in the main Annihilation series before, so he had a little bit of a track record.
Right.
Not that he had a measurable track record. So it's a question of what are retailers and readers, for that matter, basing some of this on. The other thing that's interesting is there is that fourth Annihilation Conquest title, sort of, which is Nova, which ranked at 65 with 40,156 units, which did, you know, that's about 3,000 better than Wraith did. So, and that's also down 10%, though, from where the Nova title had been with the third issue. And again, that's still in a settling in period. But the other thing to take from this is you've got this Annihilation Conquest. It's, again, kind of a secondary event syndrome that we talked about a while back with Amazon's attack. And just like the first Annihilation event, this one is coming in behind another major event, this time World War Hulk instead of Civil War. And it's doing in the 35,000 to 40,000 range, you know, centering in right there at the 37,000. For any kind of event, I mean, come on.
Right. And you want to talk about the power of the Hulk. Look at number 75.
Oh, yeah. Irredeemable Ant-Man, number 10 there. It did 33,515 units. Now, that's pretty good for an average title or whatever. But compared to the previous issue, which only did 15,500 or so, I mean, that over doubled.
Right.
it had an increase of 18,000.
That's the power of the World War Hulk crossover. And if anybody questions why the publishers do crossovers, right there. That's why they do crossovers.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I'm willing to bet potentially more copies of Irredeemable Ant-Man number 10 could have been sold if they'd been at the right stores at the right time.
Right.
I really, really wish I had visibility into the sell-through, both in terms of how quickly things sell, when they sell, and how long they sit in a sold-out state. Because certainly this is a much smaller example than Captain America 25, but you can't sell something you don't have sitting on the shelf.
That's true.
It's as simple as it is. But we're never going to have that visibility. It's just not going to happen.
Right. And Green Lantern, another one.
Yeah.
You should have pulled your wallet out last time we were doing the numbers when I was surmising some ridiculous number of what I thought the Sinestro Corps special was going to sell. I think I said something about 150,000. It sold 56,000 and some last month.
Yeah.
And the reorders this month, way lower than I was expecting. Only 18,734. I mean, still, that's enough to put it at rank 122. So, you know, respectable on the reorders. Right. But more interesting is the fact that the Green Lantern Corps that ties into it had a 38% growth.
Yeah.
And the Green Lantern issue had a 35% growth. So both the Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps had significant upticks in issues over the previous issue because of this Green Lantern Corps crossover.
Well, and it's a very interesting kind of event, because unlike Marvel, where they would do a five-issue series and then tie into various titles, or even DC with Amazon's Attack, which spun out of Wonder Woman, this is really, you know, the one special and then a few other specials. So, you know, I suppose in that respect, it is kind of a mini-series, it's just not numbered as such.
Right. Well, I think it goes to show that you don't really need to, although, you know, you could say, well, if they made a Sinestro Corps miniseries, maybe it would sell better. But I kind of like the fact that they didn't feel the need to create a whole another miniseries to buy. And maybe we'll see in a few months if, because it's not in a miniseries, and this is an interesting thing that we should try to remember to track, because the Hulk miniseries is over.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those people are going to cross over and continue buying Hulk, right?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing. I think you can say to some extent that Civil War has resulted in higher Avengers sales overall than were present before Civil War happened. So is the Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps going to retain some of those higher sales levels after the Sinestro Corps war is over? That remains to be seen, but I'll be interested to see that.
Going back to your Avengers comment, though, New Avengers 32 is at, let's see, 123,000, we'll say, a little under that. And if you go back to where it was at 12 issues back or even further, this is right in the same ballpark it was doing. You know, you look at issues, say, 13 to 18, and it was doing in the 126 to 121,000 range, which is right about where it's doing. So I don't know that it really saw the huge benefit from Civil War after the fact. Certainly during, it saw some bumps here and there.
Yeah, I was more thinking of the fact that the Avengers seems to be consistently a top 10 or so title throughout Civil War and beyond, whereas I don't recall it being a top-tier title before then. But that's certainly a long time ago. I mean, we're talking years. So.
Yeah, I think certainly since the New Avengers started, it's always been a pretty much top-tier. But I think you're right that World War Hulk is an interesting example where there is a very clear title that could benefit from this. Likewise, when Amazon's Attack ends, it'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of carryover in the Wonder Woman title. And likewise with the Green Lantern Sinestro Corps stuff, if the Green Lantern titles stay up at a higher level or not. Typically, in a lot of these cases with the major events, you don't see that, but there's also usually not a clear beneficiary title to be had either. It'll be fun to watch on that. There were a couple of new number ones that I thought were interesting to look at. Spinning out of the Civil War and the Initiative and all that stuff was what had been solicited as the Champions, but came out as the Order. And the first issue of that did 57,240 units down at rank 39. And for a title spinning out of the Civil War and the Initiative, this is okay, but a little lower than I would have expected. I would have expected at least a 65 to 70,000. It just seems like this may be a matter of too many things coming out of these events, and some of them just not getting the benefit.
I think it's somewhat hampered by the fact that there's not a single character in there that is a pre-existing or known character.
Well, there's Pepper Potts, but
well,
definitely, I agree with what you're saying in essence, yeah.
You look at the cover of it, and even if they had Pepper Potts' head down in the corner, which they don't, who the hell would recognize, you know, who that is necessarily?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, it's like all the heroes that are on the cover, they're all completely new, out of left field type of heroes. It's a good series, I'm enjoying it, but it's not like it's got known characters that's going to have at least some kind of pull-through or familiarity factor.
Yeah, but compare that with Avengers Initiative, which does have known characters like Slapstick, Justice from the New Warriors, Rage from the New Warriors. I'm trying to think who else is in there. I mean, they were C, D list, and Z list characters in some cases.
Yeah, and look where it's selling. I mean, even having some goofy third-tier character like Slapstick or Rage, and that book is selling 94,000 copies.
Yeah.
So it's like you put somebody who's even vaguely recognizable on the thing, and, you know, someone, hey, I remember that character. I think I'll give that a shot. Just a theory.
I think that's certainly part of it, but I think the other thing factoring in on the Avengers Initiative is the title. It's got Avengers in the name, and it's very heavily branded Avengers, and I think some people may have initially confused the Initiative aspect as just being, you know, crossover title. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
So it's selling more based on the strength of the Avengers name, and certainly the presence of, you know, Hank Pym and some of these other characters in it. It's just funny that they didn't think to leverage that with the Order and, you know, more prominently feature Iron Man or some of the other characters and see the boost from that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they could have called it Avengers : the Order and slapped Iron Man on the cover and probably done a lot better.
Yeah. The other one, speaking of Avengers and number ones, is at rank 35, and I think this item did pretty well. And it's the new Avengers Transformers number 1. And it came in at 60,540 units. Which, you know, for a number 1, not bad. And for a crossover title between, you know, the new Avengers and Transformers, this did really well. I mean, it beat out The Order. It beat out Ultimate X-Men, Teen Titans, and a number of other solid titles. I was a bit surprised how well this one did.
My surprise factor comes in at slot 56.
Which is Onslaught Reborn number 4, yeah.
That this load is selling that many issues is amazing to me.
It did just under 46,000 units. Now that's down 12% from issue number 3. And if we look at where it started, the first issue did 82,636. So, I mean, this one is dropping substantially. It's lost about 45% of the initial sales. But also, this one has had some major lateness issues. This particular issue is 22 weeks late, and when you consider that first issue came out back around Thanksgiving, and this one came out July 25th, you know, the timeliness has a lot to do with some of this, too.
Imagine how late it would be if he drew feet.
There is that, yes, yes.
Anyway, my veiled Rob Liefeld slam of the...
It's a 5-issue series. Why couldn't they get this damn thing in the can before releasing it? You know, I don't understand.
It's not like it's tied into any kind of continuity where it was burning to get out there.
Yeah, yeah. And we talked a little about the Captain America 25 and some of that. The director's cut landed at slot 91 with 26,506 units, which is on top of the 317 or whatever thousand units that the issue already did before the director's cut. So I think this is pretty respectable numbers.
What do you think of All Flash number 1 there at slot 22? Was that fulfilling the solicitations of Flash number 14 that didn't come out?
Yes. Yes, it was. Again, this is one where I think if they had solicited it differently, better, whatever, it would have done better.
What did Flash number 13 sell at? Because, I mean, that's really the previous issue to this.
That initially did 76,860. I believe it had some reorder activity. Yeah, it down at slot 233 is 15,904 units of reorder activity for it. It totaled up to 82,767 units, which when you compare it to the All Flash, which did 78,922 units, it's down a little.
But, you know, I'm sure that, well, I'm not sure, but I will suspect that All Flash might get some reorder activity too.
I wouldn't expect tons, but a few thousand maybe. This is one where it kind of falls in between the end of the previous one and the return to the old numbering. It was kind of a weird way to handle the transition for the Flash.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a bad way, but it just, I don't know, it was a bit more confusing than it potentially, than it needed to be. Now, one that I felt came in understandably low, but I think will do pretty well when it hits trade paperback, is down at slot 102, and that's Supervillain Team-Up MODOK 11, which did 22,603 units. And again, opening numbers for a Marvel comic, not particularly brilliant, but I mean, this was such an oddball concept to take a bunch of C and D list supervillains and go the Ocean's 11 route with them, that for it to have done this well, I think is pretty good. But this is one that I think a lot of people just looked right past, didn't even notice, and is a solid read. So once it comes out in trade, typically a trade will do, say, 10% of the average sales. This one may do a little better than that, and certainly has the potential of showing up. Probably not in reorder activity on the trade side, because it'll probably fall beneath that, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's one of the ones that show up at an end-of-year list as doing surprisingly well based on what we see on the monthly lists.
Mm-hmm.
Another one we talked about last time was Avengers Classic. And we've got the second issue here, and it dropped by 28.52%, which, given that it's essentially reprint stuff with 8 pages of new material, that's actually a little less of a drop than I had expected. It's more than the standard 22% second issue drop, but again, so much of this is reprint versus new material. Doing right around that 21,000 mark for this reprint series is pretty good, and actually puts it above a few other titles. You know, we'll see if your guess last time around of the 12 to 18 months lifespan for this title pans out or not. I was a little surprised by the item that placed right above that in slot 109, which was the Fantastic Five first issue. That's part of the Spider-Girl continuity, or the MC2 universe. It did 21,255 units, and that actually outsold Amazing Spider-Girl, which did, that's down at rank 118, and issue 10 of Amazing Spider-Girl did 19,086 units. So this outsold it by, you know, over 2,100 units or so, and a noticeable percentage.
Right.
The Spider-Girl stuff in the MC2 universe is something that has really hung on much longer than I ever would have expected. And it's one of the ones that might do well with an anthology title. There's just enough interest to almost sustain some of these secondary titles, but not quite. And certainly I think there's some story potential to explore there.
You got a good point there. I mean, I don't care enough about any of those characters to buy them, but if there was one single MC2 book that had Fantastic Five, Spider-Girl, some of those Avengers Next, you know, different kind of things in it, I would probably pick up one book a month that kind of had rotating features or kind of an interweaving storyline of that universe that featured all the different characters.
Yeah, certainly use Amazing Spider-Girl as kind of the anchor, and then do some backup features or split book or, you know, anthology type thing for the rest. It's one that, again, self-contained, kind of pocket of continuity or whatever. It would be interesting to see them explore that, because at one point this was able to sustain multiple titles. It had like 4 or 5 at one point.
Do they still do that first-person narrative kind of thing on Spider-Girl?
Yeah.
That bugs me. That's why I don't read Spider-Girl.
No, I can understand that. It's old-school storytelling. It's something that is directly out of the 80s and 90s in many respects. I mean, the continuity it leans on heavily is the Clone Saga.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm enjoying the title. It's fun.
Something else that's interesting to me is this Stephen Colbert's Tech Jansen, number one. That,
oh, yeah.
That's way lower than I thought, especially since he mentioned that on the air on the Colbert Report and stuff like that. And maybe that's selling through other outlets in addition to through Diamond.
I hope so, because, man, 12,800 units, you know, I would have figured that a star of a basic cable TV show would do at least, you know, 15,000 units.
Also, I do note that that first issue came out and you have yet to see the second issue.
Well, and that first issue came out 18 weeks late.
Yeah.
But I read it and it was good. It was fun. It was very much in the style I had expected. Clearly, the people who write for his show had a lot to do with the writing of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that we have yet to see a subsequent issue, I think, is directly related to this level of sales.
Another thing that's very interesting to me, and because it's selling where it's selling, is two slots above that, Star Trek Year 4, number one, which is very low numbers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see that, okay, there's less Star Trek fans than Star Wars fans left out there and all that, but are they just not marketing this to the Star Trek fans? Because you'd think that picking up after the last episode of the original series and telling more stories with Kirk and Spock and, you know, the classic crew would do a little better than 13,000 issues.
I think this title came out too soon, and the reason I say that is there's been talk for a while of doing a new Star Trek movie based on the original crew with new actors, and conceivably at that point there'd be enough renewed interest in the original characters of Kirk, Spock, etc., that this might do better. But clearly, you look at this doing in the 13,100 range for a continuation of a series versus how Buffy's doing at the, you know, above 100,000 range, and it's just such a huge difference.
Let me put it into this context. I love Star Trek. I love Kirk, Spock, and that gang. I didn't buy this issue.
Yeah.
And probably the reason I didn't buy it is because they did a really weak job of marketing it. They probably wouldn't have been that hard to convince me to buy it.
Well, I remember looking at it in previews and stuff, thinking, yeah, it's interesting, but there was nothing in the solicitation to push me over the edge.
Exactly.
And this is one where if they had done a page or two of the interior art and really showed it off and had sold me on it, it might have helped. But the other difference between this and Buffy is Buffy has got Joss Whedon attached to it, and really, I don't know who's doing the Star Trek Year 4.
Right.
And IDW versus Dark Horse, one's in the front of the previews, one's not. And that certainly is not in IDW's favor.
Oh, no, definitely. I'm just making this as a point of, you know, look how if Dark Horse was putting this out.
Oh, yeah, this would be...
It would be selling 30,000 copies or something, or at least in the 20s.
I would say possibly in the 50,000. I think if Dark Horse could get their hands on the Star Trek license, certainly based on what they've done with Star Wars, they could make a very strong showing with this franchise.
Yeah. Even Dynamite, you know, which does the Battlestar Galactica and Highlander and all that kind of... I mean, if Dynamite can take, like, Highlander and Battlestar Galactica and these kind of things and sell a credible amount of them, although they certainly don't do Dark Horse numbers.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting, speaking of Dark Horse, is down at 156, and this is one that took a while to come out, and it is the Who Wants to Be a Superhero one-shot starring Feedback, winner of the first season, and that did 11,917 units, and I don't have the original solicitation information handy, so I don't know when it was originally supposed to come out.
It's at least a year late.
Yeah.
It was originally supposed... Well, you know what? No, it's not. It was originally supposed to come out, I believe, January. Because I remember going... Because Feedback's local here. I remember going to an event at a local comic shop, and Feedback was there. And it was supposed to be the weekend that this book came out. And it was right around when the Phoenix Con was, which was last January, like a week on one side or the other of it.
Right.
That's when it was originally supposed to come out. And then they pushed it back to coincide with when the second season was starting.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other stuff that's selling right around in this range of 10 to 11,000-ish are some of the Wildstorm relaunch titles. We've got Stormwatch PhD number 9 down at rank 161 with 11,400 units. Wetworks 11 at rank 163 with 11,200 units. Deathblow number 6 with 10,600 units at rank 167. And we go a little further down to rank 174 to Welcome to Tranquility number 8 with 9,500 units. And really, you know, the relaunched Wildstorm universe did not do well. And I'm curious as to kind of the exact cause of that. Certainly, I think having Wildcats and Authority start and really never go anywhere, and those being kind of two key titles in that line, did not help at all. But it's getting to the point where relaunching titles, new number ones and stuff, isn't even a safe bet these days. There was a time where you would do that and you'd be guaranteed, you know, 20, 30,000 sales just off the top, regardless of the quality. Now, we talked last time about Weapon number 1 from Image Comics that I got and enjoyed. Read the second issue. It sold 2,437 copies. To put that into context, first off, that's a drop of over 30%, or over 1,000 units from the first issue. If they had given a copy of this second issue out to all of the people who registered as press at the San Diego Comic Book Convention this summer, they probably would have moved another 500-600 units, because there were about 3,000 people who registered as press in San Diego versus this 2,400 sales figure here. You know, it just astounds me, because I remember back when San Diego would have around 3,000 attendees and comics were selling in the six-digit range, more or less across the board, it seemed like. Totally different era. The final issue, I believe, of City of Heroes from Image came in at rank 261, and it did 3,710 units. That's an increase of one copy from the previous issue, probably the least significant increase on the list. We're still seeing a number of titles doing pretty well. Buffy, again, continues to do well. It had some reorder activity on some of the titles. And you look at some of the reorder activity also down near the bottom of the list. We see some reorder activity for the World War Hulk X-Men number 1. We also see some for Heroes for Hire 11, Ghost Rider 12, and one or two others, Iron Man 19 and Hulk 107, all of which I believe tied into the World War Hulk crossover.
Yes.
So clearly that's, again, continuing to be a success for them. And of course, the first issue of World War Hulk had the reorders of 10,000 that we mentioned. That's doing respectably.
I mean, and for something like Heroes for Hire, given what it normally sells, getting another 6,500 copies on reorder is huge for that title.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Ghost Rider. You know, getting 7,400 reorders is a significant percentage of that title's normal sales. So crossover's working yet again.
Yeah, like we saw with the Irredeemable Ant-Man, where, you know, over doubled in sales. That's good for that one issue, but really it matters of, is it going to see that going forward?
That series is canceled as of 12, so it's not going to make that much of a difference in the long run.
No, but
they sold a lot more copies on the way to the last issue.
But if they had seen that carry over after issue 10, that might have been enough to save the title. It seems like it's all short term.
I believe they're moving Ant-Man into the Initiative.
Yes, they are. And that's a good move. I mean, take a character that you've spent a year building up some recognition for, keep him a viable part of the library. I always find it perplexing when they'll take a character, they'll do a series on it, series for whatever reason will end, suddenly that character's nowhere to be found. And it's like, you just spent a lot of time making that character viable to some degree. You know, you see that with Firestorm. You know, he goes for a while after his series ends, kind of nowhere to be found. If they had a place, you know, like the Initiative over at DC, somewhere where you can just toss a bunch of characters and have them show up and at least be seen and remembered, keep them in play to some degree, I think that helps.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just putting, like, Firestorm, for instance, guest starring on a semi-regular basis over in something like Blue Beetle, or even putting him into Countdown.
Yeah.
Would not be out of line. You know, keep some visibility to the character.
The reason I think we still have Firestorm today is when his original series was canceled, Jerry Conway put him in the Justice League.
That's true. That's very true.
That's what got him enough recognition and enough fan base to go spin off into another title.
Right. And his first go-round was only...
Seven issues?
Seven issues, yeah, under 10 in any event.
Yeah.
And then his second series lasted quite a bit longer, up in the 60, 80...
It lasted 100 issues.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. You know your Firestorm.
Hey, I was a fan of the character.
I was a fan of the character, too, but I don't remember all those details.
Well, when I was getting into the Justice League, it was in the Satellite era, he was a major player. Which was the transition issue of Ultimate Spider-Man? Was that 111?
What issue is the current one?
111 is the one we've got this month. And this is the transition one with Bagley and Immonen. It was only up 2.5%, but for a transition issue, that's pretty good. So it's doing 75,455 units. Keep an eye on that one with a new artist. I think that pretty much covers it for this month. Got a dozen titles over the 100,000 mark, which is pretty good. We'll see if that continues going forward.
Buffy's hanging in there.
Yeah, Buffy continuing to do so well and still seeing some reorder activity. I did not expect it to do this well. I'm glad it is. You know, it's one of those that, given that they, with Serenity, got the comic in with the DVD when it got re-released or whatever, I really think Dark Horse should see if they could do that with the final season of Buffy, or really any of the Buffy DVDs, because I think this is a solid enough series, certainly the sales are supporting that getting more of the fans of the TV series aware of it could only increase sales.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, there's no reason Buffy couldn't be the top-selling title on a regular basis. I mean, not just for Dark Horse, I mean, total. I don't know what the ratings were for the TV series. I have no idea what the sales figures were for the DVD sets, but I'm certain we're talking more in the millions range than the 100,000 range.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, any TV show has got tremendously higher viewership, especially something that lasted as long as Buffy did.
Yeah. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.